Today I want to talk about why we fail and what we can do about it. There are four different areas that I want to explore, but I'm only going to explore the first one today. The first is, we fail because our ego controls us. I think we also fail because we believe lies about ourselves, other people, God, and life. The third thing is, the reason we fail is we block divine consciousness. And the fourth one is, we reap what we sow. And if we're not good sowers, then the things that we reap are not going to be all that desirable. I want to talk about how the ego controls us, and frankly, I think that's the main reason we fail. We try to protect ourselves. The ego is designed to do that. It is designed to protect us. We could say that the ego's role is to protect our sense of ourselves, our individuality. And you could say that in some ways the ego is similar to the cell membrane. Just think of that idea. The ego and the cell membrane protect the individual and the individual cell by defending it against any kind of harmful energies that might try to penetrate it, that might try to enter it. So, okay. The ego, we could think, is largely devoted to protecting us from vibrational frequencies that would come toward us, while the cell membranes maybe deal mostly with physical substance and the vibration of those physical substances that get into the body and try to penetrate. In simple terms, protecting the self and protecting the cell against threatening energies in whatever forms we perceive is going to enhance our chances of survival. And the first order of business is survival. Survival is a good thing. We've recognized this either with individual stories or we've read about it, but the will to live in a person or in a cell can be perceived to be absolutely amazing. The way some people can survive under the most awful circumstances. You go, wow, this survival thing, we are really driven to survive. Yeah, it is. That's true. Abraham of Abraham Hicks says that as long as there's one healthy cell in a body, that body has an opportunity to completely recover to full health. So complete recovery to full health is possible as long as there's at least one cell that's healthy. And these people who have such a strong will to live, and whether it's conscious or subconscious or it's just designed into us, we can see that the ego is trying to protect our life force from being reduced and, in dire circumstances, from being stopped entirely. The ego is a good thing. I don't know about you, but you may have heard of this circumstance where a child, say in the middle of a tantrum, has threatened, I'm going to hold my breath until I die. Well, the will to live in the cells of that child's body are going to override that attempt at manipulation, but the attempt at self-destruction in short order. That is not going to happen. Years ago, we had a rescue cat, and when we came back from Panama with the cat, cat's name was Speedy, had been abused by a neighborhood kid, so my daughter Lisa insisted that we take ownership. So now we're back on Long Island, and one day Speedy is up in top of a tree, like looking like she was stuck. And so I'm pondering how to get a ladder and climb the tree and so on. And my father-in-law said to me, Tom, before you do that, consider how many cat skeletons you have seen in the tree. I said, none. He said, exactly. That cat is going to know how to get down in order to survive. And, of course, that's exactly what happened. I didn't climb the tree. I didn't risk my life or limb or the trees or Speedy's. She got back down in her own good time. The reason eggs and nuts and coconuts and seeds and you name it have shells is because the need for protection. Football players wear helmets on their head for protection and a lot of other equipment for protection. And human beings harden their hearts in order to protect themselves. Soldiers in combat situations wear protective covering, helmets, flak jackets, and on and on. And if we have relationships that are conflicted, we're going to try to protect ourselves. It is inevitable. Not with helmets, but by putting armor around our hearts and our ability to feel. We're going to try to protect ourselves from being hurt. If the first driving need of the ego that is going to be expressed through the personality is the need to defend the self from criticism, emotional, or physical attack, how are we going to do that? How are we going to protect ourselves? I think there are some standard approaches, and three occur to me. This is how we self-protect: avoidance, shielding, and aggression. Here's what I mean. If you're allergic to poison ivy, and I am, you would avoid it. You wouldn't go pick it. You would try to avoid places. If you identified it on a walk in the woods or something, you're like, okay, I'm going to move in a different direction. We're going to avoid it. If you're like me and have fair skin and sunburn is an issue, you would probably use sunscreen, which is shielding. Maybe wear a hat, which is what I do, and use protective clothing. Some of this clothing that's really designed to prevent the sun from reaching the skin. Long sleeve shirts and so on. That's shielding. You go, okay, that makes sense. And the aggression shows up for people who have been humiliated for, say, a lack of knowledge or have been abused by bigger, more powerful people. They can turn into being aggressive. Aggressive and unrelenting in their efforts to, say, gain knowledge or to develop physical skills such as martial arts, boxing, or assets like big muscles so as they can have strength because they want to feel safe and protected. And that's really an important concept. We want to feel safe and protected. In certain areas of life, and in certain cases, it makes sense that protective devices are life-enhancing. So, we understand that approach to situations that we can perceive as threatening. We avoid them, or we have developed other kind of ways to handle that. When we feel emotional pain, the urge is to shield ourselves from that pain by shutting down our emotions. Kids who experience emotional pain and maybe blame it on sensitivity, which is what I experienced as a kid, like, I don't want to feel. Right? And we try to shut down our emotions so we can't be hurt by things that people say and don't say, things that people do and don't do. And it seems like, you know what? Initially, that decision to harden our hearts seems like it's effective. Oh, whew. Oh, wow. I've got armor on. That's good. Oh, yeah. But at some point, using only the five senses and thinking as a capability is really going to severely limit the amount of awareness we can receive. We're not letting in a tremendous amount of heartfelt information. Why? Because we said, oh, no, no. I want to avoid this kind of an experience. If we consider that we receive environmental signals, you know, things that we hear, feel, smell, taste, touch, and so on, and maybe from other senses the same thing is going on, it's like, We receive those through our physical beings and our mental being. So, yep, I thought of this. I felt that with my fingertips. But that leads me to say we cannot overlook the information that we receive through our emotional being. We even have a language that describes this. You've heard this sort of aspect described before. How does that feel to you? Something doesn't feel right about that. What does your gut tell you? Your heart's not into this, is it? And it goes on and on. So we know this is a reality. We understand the importance of heart connections, but the fear of pain can cause us to shut down that faculty. It's like, no. If I can't use my five senses and my thinking, I don't want to know about it. That person has severely disadvantaged themselves by trying to protect themselves this way. Another way the ego influences us is we compare and compete, and that's why we fail. Since the ego wants to support and sustain our individuality, us, the one being, it will compare us and our individuality to that of other people. And in this comparison, it judges. If it judges us to be superior, it inferiorizes the other people. If it judges the other people to be superior to us, it will cause us to feel the pain of inferiority. Now, this can become like a hurtful cattle prod that goads us into competing relentlessly, pushing and pushing and pulling and taking and pushing until we either become, in our own estimation, temporarily superior, or we quit, or we die of inferiority. Of course, the way to overcome it is to increase our awareness and realize, I get what's going on. Nope, I think I'm going to stop doing this and look for a better approach. In this comparison, it would be great if children or adults compared apples to apples, but that doesn't always happen. For example, I had a 8-year-old client who identified her anger. She was angry at pretty much anything that and anyone that tried to restrain her from doing what she wanted to do. So she battled rules, authority, but she identified it being rooted in her early childhood. Her family lived in Wyoming and had ponies and horses. She was the youngest of four kids, and she was 3 years younger than the next child older than her, older brother. One day, the other three kids were all going out to ride on their ponies, but this little girl, less than 3 years old, had to stay in her playpen. She was not in favor of that approach. So she ranted and raved, she screamed and she cried, she threatened, she begged, she did everything she could, but her family wouldn't put her on a pony that day. And from that point on, she fought anyone and anything who told her what she couldn't do. Because she compared what the other kids could do and what she wasn't allowed to do or what she couldn't do, it never occurred to her that as a little girl she was being protected by her parents. That's not how she interpreted that event. She saw something being withheld from her, her not being allowed or permitted to do something that she wanted to do, and she made a life-complicating decision about it and battled from that point on. At an early age, children learn to compete. A lot of what goes on in school is about competition. Who had the best grade? Who knows this answer the fastest? Who is it? On and on and on. They can be taught how to compete, but the ego already has a driving need that says, hey, you have to come in first in the race of life, and it's natural to compete. We want to be bigger. We want to be stronger, smarter, richer, better looking, more successful, more influential, more powerful, and on and on and on than the next person. If you watch sporting events on television, you're going to see rule violations, which is a minor euphemism for you're going to see people cheating to get an advantage in that game. Cheaters don't usually appreciate the law of cause and effect. If they did, they would know that cheaters get cheated. One other aspect of failure based in the ego is we fail because we take and get. The ego, when it's in control, drives people to take and take and take. Hasn't this made you scratch your head? How a billionaire will fight for more tax loopholes and while at the same time not be in favor of an increase in the minimum wage or for people to have health care or a decent quality of life. Those billionaires are so stuck in the take-take mode, it defies, I don't know, common sense. It defies morality. I think the statement, haters are going to hate, can be modified, takers are going to take. And it goes on. Let me state the obvious. The human body is physical. It has its five senses of perception, and the body is even perceptible to our five senses. I mean, we could take our hand right now and feel our chin and feel our shoulder. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah, we could look around and see parts of our body. Yep, we can stand in front of a mirror, and we would be able to see more of our body. It's easy to perceive on a five-sense level. We like it. We like to do it because it's easy. It makes us feel safe when we can perceive effectively using our five senses. We can easily become fearful when we can't see into the dark, or we can't hear, or we can't otherwise perceive something. People are afraid of the dark, and whatever boogeymen they imagine could possibly be in that dark. We're afraid of things that are invisible. Things that go thump in the middle of the night. Things that can't be heard or felt or otherwise perceived. Some people are terrified of the concept of ghosts or spirits or anything else that potentially is invisible to our five senses. But in the five-sense world, we become pretty comfortable. And it's here that we can fall into the trap of believing that we really and truly only need things that can be perceived by the five senses. And there are people who believe that. I can't see it, feel it, touch it, smell it, taste it, hear it. It doesn't exist, and it's not important. Whoa. When we adopt that point of view, we think we need stuff, material things, and that stuff is outside of us, being sold to us by other people. So we got, I need some of that stuff, and some of this stuff, and some of the other stuff. And the exclusive pursuit of stuff, because we can see it and show it off, is a pattern that leads to failure. Without the awareness that the stuff is producing invisible effects on us and that we long for the invisible effects, not the stuff, we're going to remain trapped on the treadmill of acquisition and consumption, of taking and taking and getting and getting. That brings me to another reason we fail when we're controlled by ego. We fail because we hold on to what we have. We hold on to what we took. we hold on to what we got. The impulse to protect what we've acquired is the fourth driving need of the ego. It's natural to do this. It's natural to do this. We lock our front doors of our homes and our apartments. We zip our pockets when we go out, if we have keys or anything else in them. We lock the car doors. We look both ways before we cross the street. We have insurance policies. We have dental checkups. All of these are pretty normal protective mechanisms in American life. Protecting our property seems like a simple, straightforward idea. But it is not simple, and it is not straightforward when you consider that your property includes your beliefs, your attitudes, your mindset, the space around you, your body, what you think, what you feel, the words you use, what you do, as well as all of your past experiences and all the material things that you possess. And add in your family, your friends, your business, your clients, your hopes, your dreams, and it goes on and on and on. All of those things are considered by you and by me as our property. I've never really considered myself really property protective oriented. Maybe because I didn't really have very much property. I rented for years and years in the various places that I've lived. But when I was in Kansas City, I had this experience. We owned our home. And it was amazing to me, I had a mailbox out by the curb, that a neighbor built a house after I did, and he put his mailbox in about 10 inches inside of my property line. I couldn't believe the hostility I felt about that intrusion onto my property. I never ever before had a sense that I ever did that to anybody else, but I definitely did. I definitely crossed the boundary of other people's property, but I wasn't sensitive to it. But now, all of a sudden, like, wow, I couldn't believe how angry I got. And logically, I was never going to use that space. It didn't make any difference on any level. It was convenient to the mailman, and it was astonishing to me how I felt about that. And now, looking back, I realized my ego was really, really activated. When I lived in San Diego, a friend of mine needed to borrow money, so I borrowed money to lend him money. Even though he had told me he owed his mother money and she was expecting repayment and he couldn't repay her, something in his own ego, right? His own ego didn't let him do that. And despite all of those warning signs, I borrowed money to lend to him. And he didn't repay me. And the amount of hostility, almost like a homicidal rage, I'm like, what is going on? It's $2,000. What is going on? And I couldn't get that ego control back in the bottle. It amazed me. It amazed me. Actually, horrified me as well. The more a person fears threats to their property, the more the ego is going to be in control of us, and the more likely we are to experience failure. In America, guns are big deals. We're a gun-crazy society. People buy guns, presumably, for protection. This will protect me, it'll protect my family, it'll protect my property. That's why, if you ask people why they bought guns, I bet that would be the number one idea. But when you consider the reality of how many people shoot people accidentally, they wound them, themselves or others, or accidentally kill people. Whoops, I was just cleaning the gun. I didn't know it was loaded. And you go, wait a minute. Guns don't protect you. They're threats. They're threats. They're not making you safer. They're endangering you. the more we believe the lie, there's not enough. As long as we believe in the false concept of scarcity, we set ourselves up for failure. Scarcity, not enough, and not enoughness. We feel, oh, I'm not enough. That is a common lie and a common affliction. And they're ego-induced fears. As long as we believe the ego and the idea that we alone are the cause of this not enoughness, and we alone are the solution of not enoughness, we just have to do more, be more, have more, do more, have more, be more, we are doomed to failure, frustration, illness, and a bunch of other forms of unhappiness. The main points that I want to reiterate are this. We have an ego, and it's necessary, but it can become too controlling of us. It only drives us in the direction of self-interest, and it can do that using pain to make us move along. The ego is needed for our individuality, but divine consciousness is needed for our existence. The ego wants us to have more because it has an unquenchable desire for more. Divine consciousness is providing everything we need for our well-being. Failure is on the road marked more and more, take and get, while happiness, I think, could be said to be on the road marked well-being. This talk has been about one aspect of why we fail and what we can do about it. And what we can do about it is to become the masters of our ego instead of being mastered by our ego. I'd like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our inspiration, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know that you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal, loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.